Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. You can't see me, but I just point to the ground to emphasize that this is indeed Josh Nason's Punch-Out. So for those that are just have a deep imagination, just kind of picture that in the back of your mind. We continue our look back at the year that was in pro wrestling back in 2021 with May 2021. And helping me do that is first-time guest, wrestling columnist, podcaster Jesse Collings. Gentleman I met at AEW in Boston. We talk about that on the show. But Jesse and I spent an hour, again, talking about May, and a lot of interesting things happened across pro wrestling in May, including AEW announcing they were going to be moving Dynamite to a brand new network, including a new TV show coming along with that announcement. We had Double or Nothing that happened that month. The Chris Jericho fall off the Blood and Guts cage. You guys remember the controversy about that. We had Zombies attack in WWE at WrestleMania Backlash. Had some new faces debuting in NXT. We learned about Daniel Bryan's future, or at least immediate future at the time. WWE changed their lead announcers for Raw again. Will Ospreay to vacate his IWGP heavyweight title due to a neck injury. What was going to happen with that? Everything happened in Impact. New Jack passed away. This was a crazy month. So let's get right into it too with you, me, Jesse Collings, and the month of May, 2021, in the year of pro wrestling. Enjoy. Well, yet another first-time guest on this very show, as we continue to look back at the pro wrestling year that was in 2021, looking at May, almost hitting that halfway point. And this gentleman I met for the very first time at an AEW show in Boston, Massachusetts, just about almost 2 months ago, give or take. And we sat next to each other and had a good conversation during the show. So I wanted to have a conversation on this show. And his name is Jesse Collings. He is an opinion writer for both Wrestling Inc., Voices of Wrestling. And he also co-hosts his own podcast, Gentlemen of Wrestling, as well, if I get that name right. Jesse, how are you?
It's a Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast.
Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I'm screwing up already, Jesse. I apologize.
It's all right. No, thanks for having me, Josh. Like I said, we first connected at the Dynamite taping, I want to say it was October 29th. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think one of the differences AEW is making in the wrestling world, you know, beyond the obvious stuff, is how media friendly they are. And even doing something like, you know, having a media section for people who are covering the events and putting those people in one area together and allowing them to just kind of talk during the show and meet each other and connect, I think is really interesting as far as, you know, from the wrestling media atmosphere. And like I said, we met for the first time at that show, and you know, we're collaborating on something.
Look at that. Making friends on and off the air. Imagine that, right?
Yes. Thank you, Tony Khan.
Going to give the people what they want, the best friends. We did not hug after the show, even though I was fascinated hearing about your story. So you are you live in Waltham in Massachusetts, and I live more than an hour away, yet I get to the show way sooner than you did, even though you live super close. So hearing about your traffic travails was I can certainly relate in knowing Boston traffic, that's for sure.
Yes, I was a victim of Boston city traffic. Pretty brutally. I will say at that show, I was unbelievably impressed by how quickly you got your recap online. You got it online before I even got home. And I said, how did he do that? Because I knew you had a much longer commute, you know, home than I did. And then I listened to your show after it and you're like, oh, I like found a spot to just post my laptop up in the arena.
I was
very impressed by the speed that you were able to get up, you know, your Rampage spoilers.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I was very tired the next day. That's for sure. Yeah. I basically, cause they don't, you know, for people that have covered, events before haven't covered sports before, which I'm guessing most of these people listening to this probably haven't, but usually there's like a media area. You know, there's some sort of way where, you know, like a UFC, for example, they also provide like a media and a dinner, which is really nice. Pro wrestling doesn't do that yet. There's like a media area where you can, you know, type a story afterwards, because a lot of these, you know, publications are, or these writers are working for publications where they're either on deadline or to the extent that exists anymore, or, you know, they have to have, there's some sort of area where they're after the show, they can write. So they're not waiting until, you know, middle of the night or whatever to post. And I'm like, okay, well, I have internet access. I brought a MiFi card just in case. So I'm like, all right, I want to do this now because I knew it's going to take me like probably an hour and a half to get home, and I want to be writing at like 2 a.m. So I went down to where the dashboards are, basically went down, found a little space there, wrote, and then I kept getting moved around all these seats because the cleaning crews were coming behind me. And I'd asked AEW ahead of time, like, is there any place to write? They're like, probably just best to do it in the seats. I'm like, okay, cool. So, yeah, it was kind of like a game of Frogger, like me jumping from place to place, avoiding the cleaners. But, yeah, got everything submitted, and, yeah, I was able to head home. So, yeah, it was quite a long night, that's for sure.
And one of the tricks of the trade, as you said, anyone who's covered sports, my shoot job is as an actual news reporter. I work for USA Today. And one of the earliest tricks you learn in real journalism is to find a McDonald's or a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts or someplace that is open late, if not 24 hours, that you can go to after whatever live event you might be covering to be able to type your story. It's a very important skill to know where basically every single one of those locations are in the area you're covering.
No kidding. All the travails and trials of media writers. That's for sure. So let's get into May, and this was an eventful month. We'll start off with AEW this time because in looking through, they had I'd say the more newsworthy month, give or take, and for a few different reasons. We'll start with kind of what I thought was the biggest news of the month, which was them announcing they were going to move to Dynamite, or they were going to move Dynamite to TBS rather. In 2022, first week of January, after having their home on TNT, obviously TNT undergoing a lot of changes with NHL coming aboard and the NBA, and there's preemptions and all these things. So the ability to move Dynamite over to TBS in January, that was announced. Rampage was officially announced. That was going to be debuting in August, and at the time, it was said that was going to be moving as well to TBS after basically a five-month run on TNT. Four new TNT specials were announced for 2022, so they would have some sort of presence on the network. But, you know, it feels like it's outdated to say it's a risky move to move networks, but they were, you know, because most people can find things pretty easy with DVR, or the DVR just kind of follows it along, what have you. So they announced this move, and obviously, you know, Turner loves AEW, and we'll see what happens when the TV deal comes up. But, you know, adding that other hour, adding four specials, you know, they're getting deeper and deeper in with AEW and Turner.
Yeah, and like you said, switching networks can come at a risk. I feel like this is the most minimal network shift that you could possibly imagine. This isn't like if SmackDown went to FS1 or even if AEW went to like True TV or one of the lesser Turner networks. TBS and TNT are in about the exact same amount of homes. I think TBS is in slightly more homes by a very small margin. They get almost the exact same primetime rating. I think TNT is slightly ahead, and that's mainly due to the NBA being on TNT, and in a lot of ways, Dynamite being on TNT. But they're also like right next to each other on pretty much every cable package you have. Sometimes to this day, Josh, when it's 8 o'clock, I better switch on TNT, I sometimes accidentally go to TBS because I can never remember if it's 551 or 552 on my cable because they're just so identical. So it will be interesting to see. The key takeaway, like you said, is there's going to be less preemptions, less not going to have as many Dynamites airing randomly on Saturday nights because they're not going to be competing with the extensive NBA coverage that TNT has. And the big thing that we've seen really impact their ratings over the last month or so is the West Coast issue with Dynamite, where Dynamite airs at 5 p.m. Pacific time, which is not a great time to capture viewers on the West Coast for obvious reasons. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that, like I said, this is as minimal impact of a move you can make as far as confusing people from switching networks, but we'll see how it goes.
And moving on, AEW, as we talked about last month, we're doing April, which is when AEW doesn't have pay-per-view events in a month or kind of big things happening, the news kind of dries up a little bit. But they had obviously some Some big news coming out of Double or Nothing. Britt Baker winning the women's championship. Seemed to be kind of inevitable she was going to do that, defeating Hikaru Shida. Really nice run for her following a loss, ironically enough, to Thunder the Rosa in that St. Patrick's Day Slam. And after that, just up and to the right, as they say in the business world. There was basically no doubt she was going to win the title here. Everything worked. Leo Rush returned in the Casino Battle Royal to the company. Jungle Boy winning the Casino Battle Royal, and was announced he was going to be getting a title shot against Kenny Omega in 2 weeks. That's because Kenny Omega retained his world title in a victory over Pac and Orange Cassidy in a three-way. Mark Henry came out. It was a surprise, announcing that he was signing a deal with AEW and is going to be an announcer for Rampage. Inner Circle won Stadium Stampede 2 over the Pinnacle, avoiding them splitting up forever, which I don't think anyone thought would happen. And again, Sting returning to in-ring action, easy for me to say, with Darby Allin in a win over Men of the Year. Of course, this followed AEW Revolution, where he made his return in a cinematic fashion. And this was overall, a really great show. Unusual main event. I guess the Stadium Stampede 2 was a main event, but, in terms of the world title match with a three-way, again, Pac, we had he and Omega had great matches for inserting Cassidy. It was kind of an unusual thing, but, AEW had showed in past that they were fine doing kind of these different main events, and maybe not the classic kind of like what we saw with, Omega versus Paige, which is just long singles program. It was kind of like, well, this is a smorgasbord of things, and people are going to watch a show regardless of the match. And it was just, it was kind of interesting, and the finish was interesting. But overall, Double or Nothing was good. And to me, the key takeaways obviously were that Britt Baker started her big run, and then overall, it was just another great show, really well received.
Yeah, I think because Full Gear and All Out were so just overwhelmingly good shows, and the reception to those shows was so strong, that I think Double or Nothing might kind of fly under the radar. But to me, it's probably the most memorable show of the year, and that is because it was the first real big show that had a capacity crowd.
You're right.
Since
the
pandemic started. And it wasn't the first show with, AEW had fans at Daly's Place for a long time, months and months before the show, but it was always in some form of limited capacity. And WrestleMania, which happened a month earlier, had, many more people at their building in Tampa Bay than Double or Nothing. They had 20,000 fans, and I don't know, Double or Nothing maybe had 5,000, but because it was filled to capacity, and you had just, all the hardcore AEW fans, some of whom had probably traveled down to Jacksonville for the show, just the atmosphere was tremendous. I remember the first match, which I want to say was Eddie Kingston and John Moxley versus the Young Bucks, and Moxley came out to Wild Thing, and him and Eddie Kingston were just so over, and they were going through the crowd, and just the crowd was on fire for pretty much the entire night, except for perhaps the Cody match. But it was just such a positive atmosphere, and it really reminded me why I like pro wrestling, and when a show is over and you feel really jazzed up about it, and it's just the energy that the crowd gave it. And that's what I really remember from Double or Nothing. There were good matches. Baker won the title, as you said. They had the second Stadium Stampede. There was the Sting match. But to me, it was just the atmosphere. It was so awesome to see that. All of our lives somewhat returning to normal, in that period of time, obviously still living in the pandemic in December, which sucks, but really, really fun atmosphere that I feel like really set a really positive tone for AEW's return to live crowds.
Mm-hmm. Well put. All Out was announced. It was going to be returning in September in Chicago. No big surprise there. The Pinnacle won the first ever Blood and Guts match. Chris Jericho took a big fall off the cage, if you remember that, and kind of a bit of a controversy, just the way that it was shot. You could kind of see the cardboard beneath him, and just the way it was shot. Again, the fall itself was obviously a big one, but just the way it was shot made it look kind of cheesy. He said he would, quote unquote, never do the fall again. He suffered dislocated elbow. There's a bunch of people giving him crap online about it, including other wrestlers I think it might have been Indy Hartwell in NXT.
Shotzi
Blackheart. Yeah. So that was interesting. They announced, again, other big news for the month, talking about kind of getting back to normal, AEW was the first to announce they were going to be resuming touring the very first week of July. So people have been waiting for that. Obviously, a year of working in front of essentially the same fans in Daly's place. Ricky Starks was announced he was going to miss 3 months due to a fractured neck, taking a bump in a match with Hangman Page. SCU retired as a team following their loss to tag team champions, the Young Bucks. That was on Dynamite. And I remember that because they did a kind of a to the back moment right as after the match ended. Didn't really give them much of a farewell or anything like that. Miro became the latest TNT champion, defeating Darby Allin. John Moxley's book, it was announced it would be released in November. November's Full Gear was announced to be heading to St. Louis. That would change down the road. Eric Bischoff made an appearance on the Double or Nothing Go Home show as part of the Inner Circle celebration, because again, stipulation going into the match, which no one really kind of believed, was that the Inner Circle would break up if they lost to the Pinnacle on that show. Cody Rhodes, in a press call, denied any infighting among the EVPs. That was kind of a story that had brewed up throughout the month, that the Bucks and Omega and Cody, there was infighting, and he denied that. And he also attempted to explain his promo on Anthony Ogogo leading into Double or Nothing. This is kind of not a nationalist promo, but just kind of this weird, like, American versus Britain promo, and like trying to say what's proud to be an American. And it was just really strange. And so he attempted to explain that. He made a comment about a focus group that he had run it through, and he said he didn't really mean that because he didn't even know what a focus group was, and really just kind of bizarre. Speaking of Cody, Shaquille O'Neal said he was going to wrestle again this summer. That never happened. Tony Khan did a anti-Nick Khan promo. We'll get to why in a minute. Basically saying there was no way that WWE was going to do a deal with New Japan. Again, we'll talk about that in a second. And in a story that I completely forgot about, AEW Latin announcer Willie Urbina was fired after mocking an Asian accent on air. He was doing commentary with Thunder Rosa and somebody else. For the Spanish feed, rather. And
I think it was Alex Abrahantes.
That's who it was. Correct. Good call. And Hikaru Shida was wrestling, and he just kind of essentially mocked her laughing, or mocked at how she talked, or something along those lines. Kind of the stereotypical accent, you can imagine that. And then it just became that the clip got out there, and I believe within a day or so, they announced he was going to be let go. So I had completely forgot about that. So your thoughts, Jesse, on any of those items?
Only Jerry Lawler can get away with that, not Willie Urbina. But
right.
You know, Cody, I think, at least from my perspective, you can, and part of it is the return to live crowds at this time period. I think you can point to kind of the Agogo program with Cody as where I think a certain segment of the fan base did start to turn on Cody and create this dynamic that we have now with him, where people really, really don't like him. A portion of the audience, you know, don't like him, and other people are neutral, and other people really like him. But I do feel like he started to lose some fans with the Agogo promo. I think there's a certain group of people that never liked Cody anyway. I think there was a natural dislike of Cody personally for some fans for whatever reason. But I do think that the kind of flag waving promo would rub some people the wrong way politically. Part of it is the political climate we live in now, where, you know, the flag and patriotism has been somewhat bastardized or compromised. And, you know, any international fans, of which AEW has many, you know, whether they're British or Canadian or from any other country in the world, might respond poorly to that. But I do feel like that was the start of kind of creating the dynamic that Cody has now. And I don't know if that's a negative thing or a positive thing. I think it's really interesting as far as when I watch it. But I do think you can point to the Agogo feud and kind of see that's where things started to change for Cody when it comes from a crowd reaction.
Yeah, that whole summer of just the angle with the factory and Nightmare Family, and it was okay for a point. Then it started really going too long, and the Agogo match wasn't really one that I was excited to see, and yeah, the promo was odd, but just was kind of like, well, Agogo really hasn't been established that much on TV. And he, you know, if you look at Cody's first year and a half, he had been involved in the top programs really in the company. I mean, you remember the feud with MJF leading up to that was hot. Obviously there was the world title program with Jericho, which ended up, you know, if he lost, he wouldn't get another title shot, and that whole back on discussion as far as people actually wanting a stipulation to go back and him insisting it wouldn't and so on and so forth. And he was really involved in interesting stuff. People really into him. And he just really kind of got lost along the way. There was the announcement we did earlier this year, covering a past show rather, about the reality show. And then I was kind of like, why is he doing that? And it was just this 2021 for him is really, really odd when it comes to some of the choices that were made and kind of where he's at today, where, yeah, he's this, I think people really kind of want him to turn. He doesn't really want to. And we're kind of back in this like John Cena situation. And yeah, it's he's in a weird spot. I really don't know what to make of his year. And yeah, this is that's a good point that maybe the Agogo promo was kind of the impetus for a lot of this, you know, just frustration and annoyance with seeing him on TV, I guess.
Yeah, you can even go back to like the Dustin Rhodes feud. That was, you know, his first real feud in AEW, the one at Double or Nothing a few years ago, which was a hot feud. And Cody was really like kind of batting 1,000 up until 2021 when it came to the feuds he was in. Like you mentioned, the Chris Jericho program, the MJF program, the program with Brody Lee over the TNT title.
Yeah, yep.
You know, this was some of the best stuff in the company. And I think it's been more hit or miss in 2021. And I think that his relationship with the fans have changed. And like other people have said this, but, you know, booing Cody might become the cool thing to do, and you'll get more fans who start doing it. And I don't know what he's going to do. I do feel like, we're recording this the day after the Dynamite, where he came out and interrupted Sammy Guevara in just a total, to me, that was a total heel move. But we'll see what happens. I feel like eventually he is going to turn like significantly heel. I do think that is going to happen.
Yep. And that to me would be the perfect time to go back on that stipulation somehow. I think Cody world title run, like a heel run, I think would be pretty awesome.
I'm not even a world title run. I'm just saying the way his character is now, and I know people really don't want to see it, and I think that's the point. I feel like if he goes heel, breaks his stipulations, I think he loses to Sammy, and then he says, I'm breaking my stipulation. I want to challenge for the world title. And you have just full-blown heel Cody versus babyface Hangman Page kind of defending AEW and defending, I guess, like goodness against Cody being, you know, a liar about his stipulation. I think that's a monster program. I think that would be red hot.
Yep, I agree.
And it would help Hangman a lot.
I think it would too. Yeah, absolutely agree. So flipping to something not exactly red hot, WWE, and they had a... They had an interesting month for a lot of reasons. So I think probably as I was kind of going through this, there's a lot of interesting things here. We'll just kind of dive into it. Backlash, we had the zombie lumberjack match, if you remember this. This was, I completely forgot this happened. This is really when it stuck out to me how much corporate sponsorship now and kind of more active sponsorships are going to become a bigger thing with WWE. We've seen this a little bit before here and there, but you know, to basically advertise this Army of the Dead movie that Dave Bautista was in for Netflix and essentially kind of work it into a match. This was strange, very strange. Miz actually tore his ACL during this match as well, but of course he was eaten by zombies, so that was the least of his worries. The show itself, you know, kind of ho-hum. This was WrestleMania Backlash, obviously, so Roman Reigns retaining the title in a by submission over Cesaro, retaining the Universal title, that is. I completely forgot that match happened. Bobby Lashley retained the world title, WWE title, over Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman in a three-way. Both Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley retained their titles, and then the Mysterios won the SmackDown tag team titles. I just remember the zombie lumberjack match, kind of the fallout from it. And I remember the, you know, following investors call where, you know, they're kind of defending the, not really defending, but talking about all the social media chatter about it and all that stuff and acting like it was really good when I think fans are kind of like, this wasn't good. And again, it's another one of these kind of like standoffs between this is how we want our wrestling and WWE saying that's dead. This is how we're doing things now.
Yeah, I remember, you know, the zombie lumberjack match happening at WrestleMania Backlash, the most, I feel like, a pay-per-view name totally designed for SEO optimization, yep. In the sense, yep, that people would think that they're talking about WrestleMania when it's just, you know, the typical Backlash show. I remember like people like hated the match and said it was really bad and all this stuff like that. And when I was watching it, like I knew it was bad, but it almost didn't faze me because we had seen so many of these wacky cinematic matches in WWE, you know, before, throughout the pandemic era of wrestling, you know, as we were a few months removed from the Alexa Bliss, Randy Orton match, you know, the absurd match where Alexa Bliss was like making lighting rigs fall near Randy Orton and all sorts of stuff. And so like, I guess my expectations for like how zany and weird and stupid a WWE match can be were so low that this didn't faze me as much as other people. But like you said, it really was a sign of, you know, the corporate end of WWE and how they're going to work in sponsorships and advertisements directly into a product in the way that they hadn't before. We've seen it subsequently in different other shows. We've seen the Survivor Series, you know, Battle Royal that they had, which was essentially just an ad for Pizza Hut. And that's going to be the norm because I think they're getting money from that. And it's something that they can say to on the investor calls and the reports saying, we got all this extra revenue. And look, you can even see for yourself how we're doing it. It's tied directly into our product. And it's probably good for WWE's bottom line. It's good for the investors. It's not great for a viewer. I mean, I'm frustrated alone with the amount of commercials that I get on during WWE pay-per-view events now on Peacock, where it used to be like the shows are long enough. There's so much filler in between matches anyway on WWE shows. We got to do a 10-minute video recap before every match. You have to have backstage segments in between matches. I feel like the pay-per-views drag already, and now you're throwing in all these advertisements, some of which are the same repeated advertisements over and over again. It's just a different presentation of the product overall, and something that I think will become a bigger issue potentially in 2022. If they continue to do stuff like this, because a lot of them, like the Zombie Lumberjack match, are not going to land with the audience. Wrestling fans aren't going to be excited to see stuff like that.
Yeah, and from someone that I used to work in pro sports for about 6 or 7 years, and on the sponsorship end of things, I can tell you this is stuff like this is kind of what an advertiser dreams about, because it's not just a static ad somewhere. It's actually involved in it. But I also know, having done that when we used to do things, it was, you know, if the fans don't like it, then you're actually going to hurt the sponsor more than you're going to help them. Now, this is a much different case. It's tough to track back. Okay, did people actually want to watch the movie from as a result of seeing this? I don't think so. It's more kind of an awareness thing, but it was also not like fully directly. It was kind of like the thing we just saw with the Red Notice, the egg, right? And the egg is tied into this Red Notice movie on Netflix with The Rock and what have you. But they didn't blatantly say, this is from the movie. So if you hadn't seen the movie, which I hadn't even seen yet, I had no idea what that was referenced to. I watched the movie and I'm like, oh, okay, there's a whole Cleopatra's egg thing. It's kind of like they're doing these things and it's like, oh, sponsored involvement. But you do have to at times be blatant and say, this is why we're showing you this, because there's a tie into X, because so many people will fast forward and not even see ads or things like that. There's just it's kind of like they're doing it, but they're doing it in a way which irritates fans and may not actually help the sponsor either, you know?
Yeah, people have a negative association with it. Like the idea is that from WWE's perspective is that it's going to be a positive. The idea is that people were really entertained by the Zombie Lumberjack match and, you know, got a kick out of seeing Miz getting eaten by zombies. That's the idea, because WWE's creative process isn't necessarily in touch with, you know, what fans actually want to see a lot of the time, that the result is you get a crappy segment that fans is a huge turnoff for fans. And like you said, now fans are going to be like, well, why would I want to see that movie when it was associated with this thing I was really frustrated watching?
Right. Let's go over this first chunk of this list. Some few interesting things here. WWE announced they were going to be targeting mid-July for return. And then so shortly after that announced their first three shows and the first six, and kind of easing their way back into getting back on the road for Raw and SmackDown. And obviously the pay-per-views. AJ Francis, Anthony Henry, Ikemen Jiro, and Alex Zane made their debuts on NXT. Eva Marie, the person everyone wanted to return back to WWE TV, has announced she was going to be returning back to Raw. Also, Mansoor joined the roster. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell won the NXT Women's Tag Team titles, while Natalya and Tamina won the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. Daniel Bryan's contract, it was confirmed it expired after his final match on SmackDown. That was news at that point. So obviously he became a free agent, could go anywhere. And we learned more about that as the year went on. Jimmy Uso returned back from injury due to his knee injury, rather. And his loyalty was questioned in this whole bloodline angle. Humberto Carrillo took a nasty bump on the outside of the ring and was revealed to be okay after a little bit of an injury scare there. The match had to be stopped early. Madison Square Garden was noted as to be considered for SummerSlam, as well as Las Vegas, which was considered the front runner. It was going to be held on a Saturday as of the month. At the end of the month, they had not announced where it was going to be held, which obviously would be Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. It was Cardi B, who had some interactions with WWE fans or what have you on Twitter. There was some rumor that she was going to host, which ended up didn't happening. The John Cena created show called WWE Evil. It was announced the series was going to be coming to the network, focusing on classic WWE villains, so to speak. Takeover In Your House, the return of that, was set for June, as well as Hell in a Cell, that was announced. The Hit Row Stable was introduced on NXT TV. And then Selena Vega, after basically saying that she was pro-union and all this stuff happening in November, announced that she was, noted that she was going to be working on her return to WWE, which seemed impossible at the time, but there it goes. She's was announcing on her coming back, which would eventually happen. Thoughts on any of that, Chunk?
Well, WWE, announcing their return to live shows, both with the first three shows announced, and then kind of hyping up the pay per views like SummerSlam and Money in the Bank. Shows that ended up being very successful from a drawing standpoint. If you remember at the time, Josh, when those the first shows were announced and the tickets were put on sale, ticket sales were really poor for WWE on their return to the road. I remember that being a news story where it's like, well, they were expecting this big pent-up demand. They were putting it in the investors' calls. They would say, we expect to be hot coming up, as soon as we get back on the road. Look at, the attendance for UFC shows with fans, and look at the attendance for baseball with fans, and we're going to be hot. And ticket sales were originally very slow. What ended up happening was John Cena came back and really moved a ton of tickets for WWE in a way that really highlighted just how big of a star he was, especially in comparison to everyone else on the roster. I mean, I think in some scenarios he like doubled sales. They were selling 4,000 tickets and then they're selling 8,000 tickets.
Yeah.
And you can look back now at like the rest of the attendance that WWE was doing, in July and August, in early September when they had John Cena, and compare it to what they've been doing the last few months, it is a huge drop off. So this kind of set the stage for further affirmation of how big of a star John Cena is. The Zelina Vega thing, like you said, mentioned, is one of the odd stories of 2021. And another element of that was that allegedly she wanted to come back because of her husband was in the company, which is Malachi Black. I don't know if it's her husband. They're a couple. I know that. And of course, by the time she actually gets back, I think Malachi Black or Aleister Black is gone from the company. So it's another wrinkle to that story that just made it even more bizarre.
Right. He made his return this month as well. Yeah, he would soon be cut. And we'll talk about that more when we get to June. Next chunk here, Sonya Deville's alleged abductor was deemed not fit to stand trial. If you guys remember that story from 2020, just this crazy case of him essentially stalking her, actually not essentially stalking her, breaking into the home where she and Mandy Rose was actually staying there as well. Really kind of scary story. Could have ended very, very badly. Luckily it did not, but her alleged abductor deemed not fit to stand trial due to his mental state. Due to the new rollout, new entranceways and ramps were coming, which WWE does like to do when they have essentially relaunches. Bronson Reed won the NXT North American title. Tyler Bate won the NXT UK Heritage Cup. More cuts. Kavita Devi, Jessamine Duke, Ezra Judge, Skylar Story, Vanessa Bourne, Alexander Wolf, and referees Drake Wirtz, who had quite a year himself, and Jake Clemens were both all cut from NXT. WWE continue to make redundancy cuts throughout their divisions within the company and also in front of the camera as well. as announcer Tom Phillips was let go. Velveteen Dream was released, and this was a long-going story about where was this guy. He had last appeared, I believe it was December, against Adam Cole, if I'm remembering. It could have been October, but he was cut, and he denied some of the claims that had been made against him as far as some sexual misconduct allegations or so. He still has not worked at this point. He has tried to at least at one appearance, and then fans kind of quelched that pretty quickly. So he's still a free agent and doesn't appear to be signing anywhere anytime soon. WWE was essentially news came out. They're working on a deal with Speedball Mike Bailey, which never happened. Rick Boogs debuted. Speaking of more changes, Adnan Virk out a month after starting with WWE as a lead announcer on Raw. He was going to be out. And then Jimmy Smith, an MMA announcer who I know and has actually been on the show before, it was announced he's going to be in, even though he had never called a pro wrestling match in his whole life. John Cena called Taiwan a country. That became a controversy. He had to apologize essentially to the whole country of China. That was just a strange, bizarre story, which some mainstream publications actually picked up on as well. And then WWE and New Japan, Dave Meltzer reporting that they were discussing a partnership. And this was kind of tied into trying to keep Daniel Bryan and if they could work something out and all these things. And that was what I was talking about before with Tony Khan cutting the very in-character promo on Nick Khan, essentially saying there was no way that that was going to happen. And Tony Khan later interviews said the reason he did that is because he knew that there was nothing that was going to be happening to that besides that talks, but there was nothing cement there.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me is the quick announcing change on Raw with Virk coming in for a month and then losing the gig and leaving the company, and then Jimmy Smith being brought in. It was kind of a sign of Nick Khan, because I guess Adam Virk was very close to Nick Khan. I think Nick Khan had represented him when Nick Khan was still a regular agent. And it was like he got, you know, his guy who was a fairly well-known sportscaster in Adam Virk. He had been on SportsCenter. I believe he was working for MLB Network. Was, you know, someone I recognized from being a sports fan, and he got that job right away with no experience, and it went very predictably, and went poorly. And then so they bring in Jimmy Smith, who like you said, you know, had never called a wrestling match in his life, and it was kind of like, okay, well, you just failed bringing in this new guy who didn't have any experience, and now you're bringing in another guy who doesn't have any experience. But I will say, I think Jimmy Smith's pretty good in the role, especially when you consider what he was coming into and how strange of a company WWE is and how often you kind of have to get stuff over that's hard to sell to an audience. And so I think that's actually been one of the really good moves that WWE has made in 2021 is bringing in Jimmy Smith, and how quickly he's adapted to the company has been very impressive.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. Let's see. Yeah, the cuts they made, the Velveteen Dream story. It's crazy. Like a year prior, 2 years prior, he was almost, there was talk about him being called to the main roster. And essentially, it was a case of it wasn't if or when. And how his ex is gone, man. I mean, life, like this phrase in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like life comes at you fast. You know, I mean, it's. To sit here and enter 2021, he's jobless essentially when it comes to pro wrestling. And this guy that seemed to be like ready for the main roster, at least in the character form, completely done.
People thought that he was like a future WrestleMania main eventer. People really were high on him. I was personally never really that high on him. I think he stood out because he was different in a company where people are often very similar in their presentation. But I mean, there were a lot of people who were like, this guy gets it. This guy's got the character. This guy reminds me of young Shawn Michaels or whoever great wrestler you want to compare him to. There were a lot of people that were like, this guy is the future of WWE. And like you said, life comes at you fast. A really remarkable fall from grace. All things considered, and a lot of it, you know, stems from that sexual assaults, you know, allegation.
Right. Let's flip to Japan. Newsworthy month for New Japan, as it seems to always be, as they try to work their way through this pandemic. Will Ospreay had to vacate the IWGP title due to a neck injury. He'd held the title for, I believe, it was like 47 days. It was announced that Okada versus Takagi for the title was going to be held at Dominion. And obviously that was announced after Ospreay defended against Takagi at night two of wrestling Dontaku. Yeah, there we go. Dontaku. For the Japanese expert here. Jay White defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi to win the Never Openweight Championship at that same event. And he became the only wrestler in New Japan history to hold the IWGP Heavyweight title, the Intercontinental title, the United States title, and the Never Openweight Championship. So he was happy to tell people about that. Six wrestlers were off night two of that show due to coronavirus testing or what have you. They had a lot of positive corona tests throughout the month, including Okada, Taichi, and also El Desperado. So Wrestling Grand Slam was postponed due to the state of emergency of Japan. And then they would announce that shows are going to be returning on May 22nd. So they had to take a pause there. Hanakamura Show Memorial happened. That was obviously on Fight TV, and that was an emotional night for everyone involved. Good show. Satoshi Kojima was announced he was going to be making his New Japan Strong debut as he was heading over to the United States for a short time. And then Onita announced he was going to be launching his own Exploding Deathmatch promotion. So yeah, New Japan trying to get some sort of normalcy with Will Ospreay as champion. You know, less than 2 months later, that had to change. Going back to Okada, shows canceled, COVID, just another rough month, an interesting month for New Japan.
Yeah, just looking at like the notes that you just kind of read off, it's just one negative thing after another. Even something that's like positive, like, oh, Jay White won the Never Openweight Championship. Like kind of after that happened, Jay White went to America where he didn't really do a whole lot. I know he showed up in Impact. And then he just ended up losing the Openweight Championship to Ishii. That was kind of the story of New Japan, unfortunately, this year. I thought there were some really excellent matches in the first half of the year. And I think the G1 was reasonably entertaining. But it is just kind of the year for New Japan. I wanted to say real quick, like kind of tying into what you mentioned when we were talking about WWE with the New Japan and WWE partnership and that kind of emerging in May. And what a strange story that was, just because the companies seem so philosophically different about what kind of product they want to present. And obviously later we would see AEW and New Japan have an improved relationship and end up sharing some talent. And that probably makes it unlikely that WWE and New Japan will have a relationship with one another. But I will say part of the new philosophy in New Japan, I guess, is to be more open with working with other promotions. And we've already seen that with the big, you know, Wrestle Kingdom Night 3 is going to be Noah versus New Japan. So it would still surprise me if WWE and New Japan end up doing something together, but I would actually seem like more likely now than it would be last May, where it just seems such a bizarre story.
Yeah, I still can't see them working in WWE because it's like one's a pro wrestling company, the other one's sports entertainment, you know? And just the control factor. And I think they would also want exclusivity. And I don't think New Japan's going to want to do that. I don't think their talents are going to want to do that, right? I think people have left there for certain reasons and have hard feelings, whatever. I just, I don't know. I think that look, as we've gone through this year, anything is possible. I just think that one might be, I was shocked when I first heard it. Then when you heard the Daniel Bryan tie and stuff, it's like, okay, that makes sense. And obviously they must really want to keep him if they're willing to go to this route. It's just, I just don't know how it would work, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of those things where I think if they were to have a relationship, which again, I really don't expect, it would be something like WWE allowing some of their talent to do some New Japan stuff. The issue I would see is I don't know like who on WWE's roster would they be so like interested in retaining to the degree that they would want to make a deal like this with New Japan. Like they were with Daniel Bryan, but is there anyone on the roster who seems both really important that they would want to retain pretty much at any cost, and that would seem like someone who really wants to do New Japan Pro Wrestling? Like, I don't think Roman Reigns is going to be like, I'm leaving unless you get me, you know, allow me to work New Japan Pro Wrestling. I don't know if like Seth Rollins would be like that. I don't know if Drew McIntyre would be like that. It would be interesting to me to see if there's anyone on WWE's roster that would be in that kind of Daniel Bryan position where they really want to do outside stuff, but would also like to stay in WWE. I just think they're kind of, like you said, it's kind of two different focuses. Either you're in WWE and you love WWE and that's all you want to do, or if you can get out, you want to do all this other stuff.
So flip to ROH, pretty quiet month for them. Tony Deppen winning the TV title from Tracy Williams. Lainey Leonard, it was announced he was going to be returning to call the women's title tournament, and the field started getting filled out for that. They announced the Survival of the Fittest tourney was returning, and then July's Best in the World pay-per-view was going to be held out of fans, or held in front of fans, and that was going to be the first time for them since prior to the pandemic as well. I mean, nothing really that newsworthy there. Anything from you?
I'm just kind of looking at the women's title tourney, and, you know, Ring of Honor has had a start and stop kind of relationship with their women's division. They've tried stuff, they've given up, they tried new stuff, they gave up. And it did seem like they were really making progress and were trying to do it right this time. And it's too bad, you know, there's many negatives that come from Ring of Honor kind of disappearing or whatever is going to happen to it in 2022. It does seem like it's kind of an end of an era. And one of the things is that I feel like they were making a lot of progress with their women's division. I think they were doing interesting things. You know, they brought in someone like Trisha Dora, who is a more well-known independent women's wrestler, but they were also finding people like Roxy, who were young, inexperienced wrestlers, but had star potential. And I do think it would have benefited women's wrestling in general to have Ring of Honor in the game and to have kind of a stable weekly wrestling show that also is somewhat focused on like independent wrestling women. Cause you know, WWE has their roster, AEW has their roster, Impact has their roster. To me, there's not really a weekly show kind of like Ring of Honor where you could get a lot of women from the independent scene getting, you know, shots here and there. I think it just would have benefited women's wrestling in general. And like with a lot of things, Ring of Honor kind of sinking is problematic in the wrestling atmosphere, but I do feel bad for what looked like a women's division that was really starting to show promise, kind of getting, you know, cut off at the legs by what ended up happening to the company.
Yeah. I think with many, we're kind of interested to see if they do come back in April. And I don't think that's a guarantee. A lot of things can happen. You know, if you look at 3 months, that's 3 months from now, 3+ months. And you look at, you know, what happened 3 months ago. I mean, things just, everything changes so fast now. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, I think GCW filled the void that, and it's hard to imagine there's a void because there's so much wrestling on TV now, but GCW kind of filled that void of, like, must-see indie in a lot of ways. And it's, like, ROH, like, what, like, they're going to come back and kind of do the same model, like, not having contract talent away. But isn't that GCW? Isn't that one of these other I just don't know how they're going to be different, and they're really going to have to work hard to stand out and not feel, otherwise they're just going to feel like the same Ring of Honor, just with, you know, different talent. I don't know how they're going to pull it off. It's possible, but you know, I think, you know, what made me bring this up is I'm thinking like Roxy and Trisha Dora. I would assume those two are going to get signed pretty quick once they're free to go. I think those are two of the standout talents, I think, from that whole tournament, obviously. And I mean, if you're, again, I don't know how interested WWE is signing people, but to me, I think with both of them, I think if you're AEW, make a play for them to bolster that women's division. I think if you're WWE, Impact, or AEW, you're trying to get those two as soon as possible. That'd be my instinct.
Yeah, Ring of Honor, just its space in wrestling is very unusual in the sense that I feel like they're a stale brand. That's ultimately what it comes down to, is I feel like Ring of Honor has been around for 20 years. People recognize the peak of Ring of Honor, and some people will have, you know, disagreements on when that peak actually was. From a business standpoint, it was only a few years ago. But it's kind of like people, I think, just see it as stale. And like you said, you know, GCW kind of growing and GCW being in some ways more innovative in a way that Ring of Honor used to be and Ring of Honor just wasn't anymore. And a big part of that, I thought, was roster flexibility. Ring of Honor had all these people signed to contracts and they felt like they had to use them all the time. So it was kind of the same names being on each show, and every pay-per-view had to have the same people on it. And while they brought in new names and pushed different names, it did feel like their roster kind of got stale and they didn't necessarily have the flexibility of a company like GCW, who as an indie company can just sign anybody that's starting to get buzz. So they always have, you know, the new person on the indies who's gaining a little bit of traction. They're bringing in Lee Moriarty. They're bringing in, you know, the Top Flight brothers. They're bringing in, you know, these names on the independents that we're starting to get over at the grassroots level. Ring of Honor just seemed to have, you know, stuck with, you know, having Jay Lethal and the Briscoe brothers and Dalton Castle and Silas Young, and nothing against any of those talents, but I did feel like a lot of those talents were stale and there was little for them to do in Ring of Honor. And the other aspect of it is I just think, unlike Impact, which we'll talk about in a second, Ring of Honor isn't like bad, and they don't have a reputation for being bad. Like, it wasn't like if I watched Ring of Honor semi-regularly this year, and like I thought, you know, TV was good. I thought the announcing is really good. The talent is the skill level of the talent is high. The matches are good. They do some really interesting long-term storytelling. Like, the show is good. It just wasn't able to gain buzz or momentum. And I think that goes back to just, you know, the company felt stale.
Agreed. Let's go to Impact and their news of the month at Under Siege. Moose winning a 6-way to earn a title shot at Against All Odds against Kenny Omega. Both Deonna Purrazzo and Josh Alexander retained their respective titles, and Fire and Flava regained their knockout titles by defeating Jordan Grace and Rachel Ellering. Moose signed a new multi-year deal with the company. Slammiversary was announced for July. Jordan Grace re-upped and signed a deal for multiple years. Eddie Edwards went through a bout with appendicitis. Satoshi Kojima, we just mentioned him, has announced he was going to debut in Impact Wrestling. So again, their relationship with them continues. Don Callis, it was announced he was no longer in a vice president role with Impact or Anthem. And we learned afterwards that was essentially planned for about a year in advance. He was going to work his way out of both roles and kind of just really focus on being a performer. Led some speculation that AEW would eventually hire him full-time as Kenny Omega's manager, so to speak. Violent by Design won the tag team titles. And then I noted this TJP versus Josh Alexander Iron Man match. It was one of those kind of weird things that it started on there before the Impact show, and like just a little bit of it went through on the actual broadcast itself. And it was a really buzzworthy match. And one of the things that I remember that came out of this, it never ended up happening, but there was some discussion that they were going to try to take this on the road and essentially do this same match or a similar Iron Man match on indie shows. So you could actually say, okay, I'm going to not just bring the talents in, but say, this is what I'm specifically bringing you in for. It never happened. But I thought that was kind of a fascinating thing there, but yeah, Impact, it was just kind of another regular month.
Yeah, and Impact to me is an up and down company in that there are stuff like the TJP versus Josh Alexander match, which is really good. And there's other stuff where I'm like, I can't believe this is on television. I can't believe people think that this is good. I'd say like all the notable things is, you know, Moose signing a new deal, Jordan Grace signing a new deal. Impact, you know, they're unbelievable survivors when it comes to wrestling atmosphere. They've had so much go on in their history, and yet here they are in 2021 and they're signing talents that, you know, would presumably be wanted in other promotions. I don't know if Moose is limited by some of the personal life issues that he's had in what companies he can go to, but from a talent standpoint, I think Moose is like really underrated as far as like as a worker, and given his size and his look and how athletic he is, I think he's like kind of underrated in that regard. And Jordan Grace is someone who I feel like pretty much anyone with a women's division, including AEW and WWE, would be interested in bringing in. And the fact that Impact is able to continue to sign these people, and they have other people that, you know, have been with the company for a long time, it does show that the company still, despite all of its issues, despite its, you know, fractured history and its reputation in some wrestling circles, still alive, still able to sign talent, still able to occasionally have very good matches, still able to get a buzz on certain occasions like they did with the Kenny Omega title run and that kind of thing. They are the ultimate survivors when it comes to wrestling. I feel like, the nuclear disaster, that the only thing survive will be cockroaches and Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I think in their Twitter bio, it's like proving hard to kill since, you know, whatever their founding date was. And it's very true. Very accurate. We'll go to the drunk drawer here. The junk drawer, not the drunk drawer, the junk drawer for the rest of the stuff. Can't be drunk, but remember some of this stuff. This was kind of, I'd say, the most notable passing of the month. New Jack dying at age 58. And people obviously were, people had different relationships in terms of learning about New Jack. For me, it was the ECW run with the Gangsters. For others, it was Smoky Mountain. For others, it was, you know, his crazy stories in indies. Others, it was Dark Side of the Ring. When that aired, he was a fascinating character, a troubled character in a lot of ways, but a lot of people were very sad when he passed away at 58. That was a surprising passing, say the least. And also Don Carnot and Tony Marino passing away during the month as well. Andrade El Idolo challenged Kenny Omega for the AAA title at Triple Mania, which was confirmed. And also Deonna Purrazzo taking on Fabi Apache for their women's title was announced for that show. Heels, the show on Stars, was announced it was going to be debuting in August. Myron Reed regained the MLW middleweight title from Leo Rush on MLW's season finale show, which also featured the return to TV of Dario Cueto of Lucha Underground fame, renamed Cesar Duran, and Selena De La Renta was done with the company as well. That kind of wrapped up a season-long storyline they had. In the off season, so to speak, they had an open draft, which really didn't make much sense, but kind of go with it anyway. Some new talents, returning for this next season, Davey Richards, Alex Kane, Gringo Loco, King Mo, and Filthy Tom Lawler. Again, new names and also some returning names that were announced. CMLL said they were going to hold their first Arena Mexico show with fans in attendance since March 2020. Nick Aldis was announced he was going to be defending the NWA title against Trevor Murdoch at their June When Our Shadows Fall pay-per-view. Jon Moxley once again appeared at a GCW event, making a surprise appearance at Draft Day, confronting Nick Gage again. And then I put this in here because it affected the wrestling journalism industry. Showbuzz Daily, which is where everyone gets their rating information from, the demo information, all that as well, essentially just had this weird death, and now it's back. But it was a very strange situation where no one knew what was going on. The information wasn't updated. They were really being cagey with why things weren't working. It was speculation of, did their source get cut off? Did it, you know, essentially what happened? I don't think we ever really learned the story, but they kind of died. And then eventually they came back. And it was, for those websites like ours, which obviously rely on ring information and, you know, kind of as an interesting thing that I think fans talk about too much, to be honest, but it's still kind of part of our business. That was kind of a big story as well. So thoughts on any of the non-drunk junk drawer?
Yeah, I'll run through them pretty quickly. New Jack, like you said, some fans, you're talking about how fans like were introduced to New Jack. I'm too young to have watched New Jack like actually wrestle, like when he was in ECW. Could have seen him on the independents at some point later in his career. One of the kind of outlaw characters in wrestling, the kind of characters that don't really exist anymore. And part of that is just because the standard of professionalism is higher, but there really will never be another New Jack. And one was quite enough. I want to Davey Richards going to MLW and just kind of Davey Richards' entire return to pro wrestling. It's kind of under the radar because he's doing a lot of smaller indie shows. And the biggest thing he's doing is a few matches for MLW. He's so much better than like everyone else on the independents that are working independent today. I think a lot of people, 10 years ago, there was a lot of people believed that Davey Richards was the best worker in North America. And it's kind of funny to see how him leaving wrestling or him kind of falling out of the falling off the map, impacted where people saw him as a star. I mean, it'd be crazy 10 years ago to say that people widely believed that Johnny Gargano was a better wrestler than Davey Richards, or that Tommaso Ciampa was a better wrestler than Davey Richards. He really was like a top guy on the independents, during a period where the independents were full of incredibly talented individual wrestlers. And I think like I said, he's really doing independence now. And he's on all these small shows and he's working with all this small talent. And say whatever you want about his, you know, history, you know, and his relationships and how, you know, personalities he's clashed with and bridges he's burned. He really does seem like a guy who's truly giving back to pro wrestling in the sense of he's going out there and having matches with young talent and he's training these talents, I think, in the St. Louis area. And he really wants a new wave of wrestling talent to be good. And I've been really impressed by his return to wrestling in 2021. I think that's something that's kind of going under the radar, but has been, I think, will ultimately end up being probably pretty important to some individuals' careers. And lastly, the show buzz thing. Yeah, that was a strange development. And still, we don't really have an explanation because originally they said that the two Mitches, as they're known as, they said that their website had crashed and that they were trying to fix it. And then they just said, you know what? There's no fixing our website. We're sorry, we're done, which was really strange. And I guess like people were saying like, oh, I'm an IT professional. I can help you, you know, with your website, I can make a new website for you. And they're like, ah, no, we're good.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, I think after, you know, dark periods where we were getting ratings information, but we were getting it late, after a few dark months, they just came back and it's like the same thing. It's like it never left. It's the exact same format. It's the exact same, you know, the ratings info comes out at the exact same time, pretty much every week. Just kind of, we don't know exactly what happened. I'm kind of in the camp that I think that they lost their source and that they, you know, after a few months were able to find one and like, ah, we're back. But really interesting as far as like what happened, especially with how important, I guess, ratings reporting has become to wrestling journalism in the sense that the demand for it is incredibly high.
Yeah. Because people were offering them help and they were like, no, we're good. I'm like, I don't get this. It was so strange.
And it's not like they had an incredibly complicated website.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
I don't know really anything about coding or web design, but if you look at their website, it's not like they were running like, you know, Amazon Web Services or something like that, where it was like this massive project that would take forever to rebuild. It seemed like something that you could put together relatively quickly, but
yeah,
I think strange.
Yeah, I think it was just like pasting in tables and things like that. Yeah, I tend to think it was something with a source or they got threatened with something or it was just maybe someday they write a book about their experience. We'll find out for sure, right?
Yeah, and I'd be interested in seeing like, and I've actually reached out to those guys before because I don't think they really talk that much, but I've sent them messages because I've always wanted to interview them and kind of talk about like ratings information and what do advertisers see as valuable and why is the key demo like considered so important and all of these things, but they've never gotten back to me, but I really like to know more about it, but I don't know if they play it close to their vest.
Who knows? Well, Jesse, I appreciate the time you spent today and before I let you go, I want to give you a chance. Go ahead and plug the podcast where people can read you, feel you, follow you. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I would just tell people to follow me on Twitter at Jesse Collings, JESSECOLLINGS. That will at least connect you with anything that I happen to be doing in the wrestling sphere. I publish probably at least one column a week for either WrestlingInc.com or VoicesOfWrestling.com. Also host the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast with Jason Unpresser. That runs on YouTube. You can find that on YouTube. Just look up Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. We post bi-weekly every Friday. We kind of take one topic and dive into it. Our most recent episode, we talked about me and Jason each made our list of the top 10 wrestlers in the world under the age of 30 and kind of compared and contrast a bunch of those names. I'll occasionally pop up on other podcasts such as this one. I just participated in Voices of Wrestling, Hall of Fame, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Hall of Fame coverage I talked about the non-wrestler category. And if you want to hear me talk about Morris Siegel or Bobby Davis, I give that a listen to. You can find that on Voices of Wrestling's Patreon page, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, they do a great job going over candidates and a lot of kind of – I like it because it's outside our sphere, you know, in terms of the interest level. You know, it's good because I think it gets people outside, not influenced by our website, but kind of just an independent resource to talk about some of the candidates and all these type of things. So I love that they do that. And every single year they do it. It's really consistent. So good stuff. Jesse, I'm glad you are. I'm glad you could make some time today to come on, and look forward to having you again.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it.
All right. Hope you guys enjoy that conversation with myself and Mr. Jesse. Give him a follow. Smart guy. Someone, again, I met once at Boston. Just had me talking to him. Sat next to me at in the media seating, and a wrestling friendship was born. How about that? So as we record on this Monday, there was, won't keep you too much longer, there was awesome UFC show, UFC 269. Happened this past weekend, and we'll be talking more about that in the months ahead. I say the months ahead, I'm thinking like the, because the year in review series we're doing for MMA, the first one is out already, the second one's going to drop this week, so we'll talk more about that when we come around to December. But certainly an event well worth going out of your way to find the fights and watch those. Some good stuff there. And also I went to my local indie, Limitless Wrestling. And you, that's a local indie in Maine. You can watch them on IWTV. I do a podcast for them as well. It was nice as my first show out since September, just because of scheduling and timing and life and all that type of stuff. So it's actually able to go out and see some indie wrestling. That was a lot of fun this past weekend. Had two Christmas parties I attended on Saturday. One was a little bit of a mess when it came to getting back and forth. My wife had came down with food poisoning between one party and another. So yeah, it was I could say a fun Saturday, but I'd be lying to you if I did say that. Other than UFC 269, that was a lot of fun. I hope you guys are doing well with all the parties you're going to, non-parties, celebrating by yourself, whatever you do. I hope you guys are doing it safely and having fun as we hurtle towards the end of this 2021. So I'm going to let you guys go. Coming up this week, we have the Year in MMA Part 2 with Paul Fontaine. That should be up on Wednesday. And then in June, we're almost halfway through the year, huh? June 2021 in wrestling, year in review. That'll be coming up, I hope, on Friday. And we're going to keep on going. So until next time, insert catchphrase here.